Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, whether you're tuning in on the radio side of our program or online or through conversationsradionetwork.com. We're glad that you can join us. Amy Heimerl is making her first appearance on our program today to talk to us not only about her new book called Detroit Hustle, a memoir of love, life, and home, but also what it was like for her as a journalist to be able to kind of turn the paper on herself and to be able to look at her own journey, not only to Detroit, but also looking at life in a different way. I think that's the connection that all of us can take away from this book, and we'll get into that more with Amy, is how really, as we look at the world around us, how so many times we just look at the black and white, but really being able to take a chance and to be able to look at the different layers and how we all kind of fit together and what we can do together to be able to solve problems and to move things forward. We're going to talk to Amy about her own revelations about that and also, of course, what she hopes you're able to take away from it. And if you're just hearing about the book, we'll remind you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. Amy, hello to you and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Cyrus.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. You know, Amy, I want to start with something that you wrote in the book that I thought was so interesting because I think it's a great way to begin this segment to kind of talk about the bigger picture of Detroit Hustle for me. And you talked about what it was like for you as you were first coming into Detroit, and you kind of compared it to the first time that you saw a Georgia O'Keeffe painting in person and how, you know, when it was something that may have been in a book or something, it was not as interesting to you. But when you're able to actually see the layers of things, it really brought things into perspective. Do you feel as though, as you kind of step back from this book and even your journey, that is one of the big takeaways, how when we hear Detroit, we have certain things that come in our mind, but actually being on the ground, you actually get more of the layers than just the flat surface that people may hear about.
Absolutely. I mean, Detroit, like a great painting, a great novel, a great piece of any kind of art, is really complex and layered. And so what many people may hear about when they think of Detroit is just our sort of abandoned buildings or blight, but there's so much more here, including a really strong, stable community that has been fighting for this, you know, for this city and its future for a really long time. And you get here and you see the gorgeous architecture from, you know, the 1920s, or you get to know people and their stories and the history here, and you're just reminded of how deep this place is, how much of a sense of soul and place it has. Very, very similar to when I was in Jackson, Mississippi. I feel like there's a lot of spiritual connection between the two places.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think our radio audience will definitely appreciate that for sure. Amy, so, I mean, I guess an obvious question was it easy for you? Because you are not just about Detroit, but about yourself and relationships. There were certain parts I was like, wow. I mean, I felt as though we were actually getting to know you. Was that an easy thing for you to do, to allow us, complete strangers, to get to not only know about this physical journey that you took, but also an emotional one that you took as well?
I think it was easier when I was just writing the book and I could think of it as just sort of me and the blank page, me and the manuscript. And even though you know you're writing a book that's going to be published, it's still a quiet conversation with yourself. And now that it's come out and people read it and either have, you know, see connections I never even intended and I'm shocked by when they pull those, you know, revelations together, or have interpreted it in ways that wasn't what I intended, that's sort of been the interesting transition, is to it being out in the world and people getting to react to it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think your journey reminds us of why all of us, and I have learned to say this myself, is that we should never say never. We should never say that we're not going to do something. You discussed in the book in chapter 2 very early on, one of the big revelations for you, I've also had to learn to stop judging myself, you wrote, and forgive. Still, I would have never guessed that I'd end up married and living in Detroit, looking to do it all over again. And I think, you know, for a lot of times when people move to a place or become a part of a new community, it really is becoming a new side of themselves. And so I guess for a lot of people, as they're hearing about your journey, Amy, and hearing about why this book really, I think, will resonate, you know, do you think part of the connection that readers are feeling, whether they've never been to Detroit, as I have never been, but I felt as though as you were discussing, you know, the plight, discussing the challenges, that I would look around and think, well, that could be here. I mean, that really is, I mean, we're just maybe not talked about as much, but is that part of the connection that you've been hearing?
I think so. I think that the connection I hear a lot is that we're all searching for what is home, whether that's the physical structure. You know, the book is about rebuilding a historic house in Detroit, but it's also about what we define as home and how we find it, especially as people are much more mobile, and so they're seeking out new places, or those that choose to stay for family or career or whatever reasons they choose to stay. They sort of see this book and think about the challenges in any community and what it's like to try to make a home there. You know, what I didn't tell you earlier is I actually didn't intend this book to be a memoir. Initially, I expected it to be a book as a journalist, more as sort of a narrative of other people's stories. And so bringing my own story in about how we integrate into these communities, how we make a home, was sort of a transition. And I had to think about all those revelations and realizations about how and why, and hope they would translate to others who might be thinking about the same things.
Right, for sure. And I think that, again, is the thing. I think also you, like a lot of people, when they move to a certain place, you have these ideas because you're thinking about being in your own power. You're going to come there and you're going to change the world and everything's just going to be great. I think, you know, there's at one point that you talk about, Amy, in the book that I smiled about when your husband and you, when you came there and you were thinking about getting a house and fixing it up and everything was just going to be perfect. And you wrote in there, I'm paraphrasing, you're surprised, you know, the agent didn't smack you upside the head, you know.
Yep.
did you find that was one of the big things, being able to realize what your vision in life may have been, and then, of course, the reality that you face?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly you don't know what you don't know when you're starting out on any path, whether that's moving to a new city, a new career, and we come with such joy and enthusiasm for the place, ideally, and sort of getting there and, you know, discovering both what's happening on the ground and sort of, you know, integrating into that place, but also bringing that, still managing to bring that enthusiasm. And I think that when we first got here, there was a lot of naivete and a lot of, as I said, you know, I'm surprised the real estate agent didn't slap us, because they've been, Detroit in particular, there's been such interest here that people have been coming for years with sort of the same sort of enthusiasm and sort of same assumptions based on what they've heard in the national media about Detroit, that there's so much effort locals here, and I assume locals in any place, have to do to educate newcomers about what the culture is, what the realities are, that there are challenges. It's not like there's some nirvana somewhere where everything's cheap and easy. There's always challenges, and so being ready to face those and face them as a community, not, you know, not to get frustrated and throw up your hands or think it's a terrible place because it doesn't meet your dreams, but the idea that your dreams morph, and that cities, you morph to cities. Cities don't morph to you.
Exactly, and I think that is so true. And I want to pick up on that point for sure, because that's an interesting thing you just said, Amy. For those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're joined by this segment by Amy Heimer. We're talking with her not only about her new book, Detroit Hustle, a memoir of love, life, and home, but also, of course, I think of change as well. And it's interesting that you said that, what you just did, Amy, because I think in some ways, I think places – can help us to evolve. One of the things that happened in this journey for you is quitting smoking, another personal thing that you share with us. Of course, you also go into a little bit as to why, you know, when you took that last cigarette, you know, and that process and what had happened before that. But, you know, do you feel as though this move was something that you as a person needed, that it really helped you to reach in ways that you had not thought that you could?
I definitely do. I mean, Detroit was the first time I ever chose a city and wanted to call it home and thought I'll figure out work around that city. I grew up in rural Colorado. I'm a journalist. You know, there aren't a lot of jobs in Colorado for journalists. The sense is, like for so many young people, that you had to go to New York, to the coast, to go where the jobs were. So I've always just gone where the job was. And
right.
It was time, I think, my husband really wanted to be able to put down roots and have a community around him. And so part of this was an evolution for me as learning how to be a wife and how to still have my dreams and meet his in a partnership, because we were newlyweds when we decided to do this. But I definitely think that has been, you know, part of the case, that this has been a personal evolution of me as a human as a person.
Yeah,
I definitely
did quit
smoking, because it's really cold here in the winter and it was too hard to smoke outside.
Right. I thought that was funny when you said that. see, I have a brother who's a smoker, and that's one of the things he says. It's during the wintertime that he considers, quitting the most. Hasn't done it yet, but he says during the winter, because our winters are a little different, of course, here in Mississippi,
yeah.
For sure. I think, going back to how I began the conversation with the Georgia O'Keeffe painting, and your thoughts about it before seeing it in person, versus to actually be there to be able to see it. I want to talk about what that has been like for you to share with other people. Because I think when people think about Detroit, beauty is not the first thing that a lot of people think about. And I say it that way because I think most of the people who talk about Detroit, in a way that may not be, in the best of light, they're not going by a personal experience. They're going by what they've heard or what a news story has told them. Have you found that that has been one of the biggest things that you have gained, is that you have a real appreciation for the place more so than just the headline?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I have such an appreciation for this place and the opportunity to share the beauty and the stories of Detroit, to tell people about Belle Isle, a 900-acre park in the middle of the Detroit River where I get to walk every morning with birds flying over my head, in these quiet woods to myself. People don't expect that. They don't expect still the beautiful old buildings like the Guardian Building downtown that just can put Rockefeller Center in New York to shame. I really loved that. I said, when I first got here, it was like a flat painting, like the Georgia O'Keeffe, and you don't see all the depth, and now I do. Sharing that has been sort of an interesting path, though, because people are coming to that conversation with their own perception. So either,
right.
Like I've been told, one critique of the book was that I make our neighborhood sound like Valhalla, and, no neighborhood in Detroit, no matter how nice, could be like I've described it. And so it's getting people to understand that there may be something different than they initially perceived about Detroit, and trying to bring that to them while also allowing, being real about Detroit, that we still have struggles. Our streetlights have gotten turned on, but we still have 40% poverty. So I can't sell it like it is just this beautiful place, though it is, because we still have many challenges. Trying to figure out what that balance is to be real but also be enthusiastic about a place I find very special.
Right. We have to talk about the sanctuary, because I thought that was an interesting part of the book too. I also like the way that you phrase what the agent said to you, and then we'll go into actually the church itself. The agent, you paraphrase in the book, said, "Whatever you want is yours if you can get it." I thought that was interesting because I think, that is such – that just made me smile to see it because, of course, for you it was the place that was there and what you were able to take away from this, from this place, and you are able to talk about your own uncertainty of was this really okay, should I be doing this? But I thought about in life, what a great thing for us to remember. Whatever you want is yours if you can get it. When you were reflecting on that experience about the church and being able to go in and look at what could be taken, talk to us about why those words stuck out to you. Why was that something that do you think you remembered?
I think I remember it because it was so incredible that I'm looking at this more than 100-year-old church that the owner was preparing to demolish and being told, like, anything here is mine for the taking. But that to do so certainly comes with some downsides. People perceive like that Detroit is there for your taking, like it's the Wild West or a blank slate. Like there's not been anybody here living, loving, building their lives. And yet there is. And so it's this really complex relationship between opportunity and this chance for me to have moved here and reinvent my life, but also knowing that with the history of Detroit and poverty and white flight and population loss, that there are also people who have lost. And you think about the church, that I have this opportunity to technically save. We took a bunch of the doors and the woodwork out and save that from the wrecking ball, but
yeah.
It certainly means there was a loss for us to gain.
Exactly. I definitely have to read that, Amy. On page 185, for those who have the print edition of Detroit Hustle, this is what Cal told Amy that I think is such a great reminder. If we don't salvage the woodwork, it all becomes rubble, all evidence of a church that has stood for 124 years erased. Better to take this once beautiful place and upcycle it to the future. Again, what a great way of looking at life. And I think that what I hope our audience takes away from this, Amy, and what I took away from it, is that we all have an opportunity to take something that looks hopeless and to turn it into something else? I mean, and we can do it starting with our thoughts. I mean, is that one of the things that you were kind of reflect on, that it all becomes a part of our perception? We can all begin at that point.
You know, that's such an interesting thing that you would say that, because I think you and a couple others have picked that up in the book in a way I had not fully realized when I was writing it. But when I go back and look at it with that knowledge, I see that's there. You know, one thing about writing this memoir, because I was writing it while we're going through the process, while we're just sort of getting settled in the city, that it was the right timing, you know, for the book because of the Detroit bankruptcy. But even if I were writing this book now, some of those connections like that, I think I would have even been able to see more in my life than I could at the time. But certainly, you know, I think you're right about that as I reflect back on it now.
Yeah, and I think that is why what you said earlier intrigued me, because I think, again, you know, things that we experience, places that we go to, I think have a way of making us a better version of ourselves in ways that we could not have imagined. And, you know, I think, you know, for me as I was reading this, it's almost as if we were able to see a part of your evolution. Does it feel like that now, hindsight being 2020 for you, as you are discussing it with people like myself, and as you said, even going back and reading it yourself, that, you know, you do see a change even in yourself throughout the book?
Oh, hugely. Huge change in myself. One of the things I never expected when I started this as nonfiction was, of course, when I got asked to do it as memoir, I had to figure out who I was and why a little girl from Fruta, Colorado would find her way to Detroit and feel like Detroit is home. And so in writing through that, I realized that a lot of this book is actually not just a love story between me and the city or me and this house, but it was working through my relationship with my father. And so I think I'd had a lot of sort of blue collar anger, working class chip on my shoulder of tough times growing up and sort of issues there. And sort of writing this book allowed me to work through that and see the power and the beauty of that childhood and the power and the beauty of that in the city and how we're connected. But it allowed me to sort of evolve and absorb that part about me and move into a greater understanding and then greater harnessing of that power to use it for, you know, to start things and build things, understand myself better.
Yeah, for sure, and I think that is it. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you did, you know, chronicle this, and, you know, it could have just been for your own reflection, but now that the world is able to read it, Amy, what was your hope? What was your hope being that they would take away not only about Detroit and what you got to know, again, going back to that Georgia O'Keeffe painting, about the layers, but also about themselves and where they might be?
I guess I hoped people would be thinking about what it means to become of a place, that with people moving around and the idea of coastal cities like New York and LA and San Francisco, people feeling priced out and looking for other places to call home, that it's about more than just being able to go somewhere and have it be where you came from, but cheaper, that there is a culture there and a place that you have to integrate into and think about how you want to be a part of that and integrating into home. I think I wrote an essay once where I said, you know, coming here from New York, how do you go from being a New Yorker to a new anything else? And I wanted to reflect on that in this great time of political divide and gentrification and you know, great conversations and but also strife around race and class, that we think of, be really thoughtful about what home is, what we're looking for, and remembering that we are integrating into a home.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think, again, that what a great thing. As I was able to read, and again, never, you haven't been to Detroit yet, what I thought about is, you know, the possibilities around us. You know, that no matter where we might be, whether it's in our neighborhood that we have lived in or, you know, where we might find ourselves at in a job, that we can choose to look at the brighter side. As you were able to take away something and make it into something else, we can do the same thing. And I think, again, you know, I think the attitude, I think that's the biggest thing for me, Amy, that comes through, is your attitude toward it and realizing that's really how it starts. Because you could have gotten there and said, I'm not doing this. Let's go back. You know, I mean, and I think the attitude of, you know, let's see what happens, because that's the whole thing. You never know what could happen until you try, for sure. What a powerful thing. Again, everyone, Amy Heimerl has been our guest for this segment. She's the author of the book, Detroit Hustle, A Memoir of Love, Life, and Home. social media is one of the places, Amy, that you are, like the rest of us these days. You know, have you gotten used to this yet? I've been mentioning about, of course, you know, this is a personal journey, but have you gotten used to now in real time being able to hear from people about their thoughts about the book, as well as, of course, being able to communicate with people about it?
I have. I think it was maybe a little easier because, being a journalist, I was already having those conversations about stories as they published and, you know, used to being sort of part of the public dialogue. But it's certainly been a switch because it's now so much more personal. And so when people have something to say about the book very personally, either pro or con, you know, that is it's really lovely to be able to do it in real time, but also a little shocking, you know, at the same time.
Right, for sure. Well, I know there will be more conversations coming up. Again, the book is available now through our friends at Amazon.com, so make sure you all get it for yourself. It's published by Running Press. And, Amy, you have a website. How can our audience stay connected with you?
I do. It's amyheimerl.com, and it's just Amy and then my last name, H-A-I, Amazon Mary, E-R-L.com.
All right. Well, Amy, congratulations to you again. Thank you so much for the time today. And look, it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime. I'd love to have you back on.
Thank you so much.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. And we thank you, our audience, for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Amy, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media site, so head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. On Twitter, I've already tagged Amy there to make it easy for you guys to find her Twitter handle. Again, of course, if you're joining us on the radio dial or through a Conversations Radio Network, you can be able to find the link through our social media links from there as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.